Welcome to Real Paranormal Activity, the network. Entertainment you'll enjoy.
You are listening to an RPA production, where people gather. LaFoss Corporation, LLC.
The world is full of mysteries. It's full of strangeness. And it exists with oddities. That's what we do on this show. We examine the strangeness, the mysterious, the oddities. This is Terry's Mysterious Moments, and I am your presenter, Terry from Texas. This is Season 8. Welcome if it's your first time. Welcome back if you've been here before. Go with us on this trip while we look at cryptids like Bigfoot, the Yeti, the Loch Ness Monster, and maybe even Thunderbirds. Be with us while we examine stories of legends such as werewolves, vampires, witches, ghosts, and hauntings. Thank you for being here. Enjoy the show. Hello, my Mysterians. This is your presenter, Terry from Texas, with another episode of Terry's Mysterious Moments. From the 1830s to the 1850s and beyond, truth be told, something happened in America that should never have happened. The forced relocation of multiple thousands of early Americans from tribal lands in the southeast United States to locations in present-day Oklahoma. The so-called five civilized tribes, which are the Cherokee, Muscogee, Seminole, Chickasaw, and Choctaw nations, and other tribes, were the victims of this injustice, which culminated in the infamous Trail of Tears. The five civilized tribes were living autonomously in what would later be termed the American Deep South. The process of cultural transformation from their traditional way of life towards a white American way of life, as proposed by George Washington and Henry Knox, was gaining momentum, especially among the Cherokee and the Choctaw. In 1831, the Choctaw became the first nation to be removed, and their removal served as the model for all future relocations. It is about the Choctaw Nation that our story deals with. Some of the Choctaw stopped in Mississippi and remained there, remaining until present times. Others moved on to the designated Indian territories further west in present-day Oklahoma. Having said all this, I will further state that this story has nothing to do with the politics of the situation or the rightness or wrongness of the situation. This was all told as background for our story. For the sake of the story, we move ahead to the early to mid-1850s, to a place now called LaFleur County in southeastern Oklahoma. It is said that in or around 1855, a band of Choctaws in what is now LaFleur County and farmers in what is now Arkansas were experiencing some terrifying events. It all began in a rather benign way with the theft of vegetables, a few head of livestock, and other foodstuffs by stealthy bandits in the night. The thieves were cagey, quiet, and never seen. They were also smart, as somehow They never ventured into Choctaw encampments on nights when a watchman was in place. Neither did the bandits ever fall into the traps set for them by farmers outside of Indian Territory. Those charged with finding and capturing these marauders began to develop a begrudging respect for the wiliness of their adversaries as time went by and the petty thefts continued. While the thefts were annoying and did cause some hardships, neither the Choctaw or the neighboring Anglo farmers were afraid of the food bandits. However, things changed once women and children began to go missing. Spurred by reports of these kidnappings, a group of 30 Choctaw cavalrymen were organized to hunt down the abductors. The group was led by a man named Joshua LaFleur, a man of mixed Choctaw and French blood who was deeply respected by his fellow tribesmen. Also joining the search party was a Choctaw warrior named Hamas Tubby, T-U-B-B-E-E, and his six sons. The Tubbies were huge men, all approaching 7 feet in height and weighing in at more than 300 pounds each, and were regarded as fierce warriors and expert horsemen. The Tubbies were so effective in mounted warfare that despite their massive size, they became known as the Light Horsemen. The contingent of searchers, armed to the teeth, set out into the region known today as the McCurtain County Wilderness area to search for the kidnappers. After riding all day, the searchers finally arrived in the area where they believed the bandits to be hiding. LaFleur brought his troops to a halt, stood up in his stirrups, and surveyed the area with the spyglass. It is unclear exactly what LaFleur saw, but whatever it was, he ordered his men to charge toward a stand of pines roughly 500 yards distant. LaFleur and the Tubby men led the attack. As the troops closed the distance between themselves and the stand of pines where the kidnappers were thought to be hiding, they were assaulted by a tremendous stench, the unmistakable odor of decay and decomposition. The horses of most of the men began to buck in rear, tossing their riders. Only the mounts of LaFleur and the Tubby men were disciplined enough to remain composed, allowing the 8 men to continue through the pines. As the men cleared the small wooded patch, they came upon a large earthen mound. Scattered across this mound were the bodies of children and women in various stages of decomposition. LaFleur and the Tubbies caught a glimpse of a number of the murderers fleeing into the tree line on the opposite side of the mound. Only 3 of the killers stood their ground to meet the charge of the Light Horsemen. It was at this time that the cavalrymen realized they were not going up against any human foe. Rather, standing before them, snarling and beating their chests, were 3 huge, hair-covered creatures. Despite what must have been a shocking sight to him, LaFleur drew his pistol and saber, spurred his mount, and charged. As LaFleur approached the nearest one, it took a mighty swipe and struck his horse in the head, killing it instantly. LaFleur managed to roll off the falling horse, quickly jumped to his feet, and fired multiple shots into the chest of the creature. LaFleur attacked the beast with his saber, opening up gaping wounds on the animal, which roared in rage and pain. LaFleur's assault on the creature was so quick and the shock of seeing hair-covered monsters so great that the Tubby men hesitated, completely stupefied, before entering the fray. This delay allowed one of the other 2 creatures to get behind LaFleur, who was intensely focused on the one he had engaged. The second beast grabbed LaFleur's head with 2 large hands and ripped it free from his shoulders. The horrible sight jolted the tubby warriors into action, and they opened fire on the three Sasquatches with 50 caliber Sharps buffalo rifles. Two of the beasts were killed instantly, dropping in their tracks. The third creature was wounded but turned and fled before the lethal shot could be fired. Robert Tubby, only 18 years old but already 6'11" and well over 300 pounds, spurred his horse, ran down the injured beast, and dispatched it with his hunting knife. As the rest of the troop, after gathering their panicked horses, joined them, the light horsemen surveyed the area. The bodies of dead women and children, most partly devoured, littered the area. The smell of decay, along with the terrible odor of the beast's feces, caused many of the men to vomit. After composing themselves, the men gathered the remains of the unfortunate women and children and buried them. They also buried their leader, Joshua LaFleur. As for the three ape-like monsters, their bodies were placed upon a huge bonfire and burned. Their hellish task complete, the Choctaw warriors returned to Tuskahoma, where it is said that even the mighty Tubby men were plagued by terrible nightmares for years afterward. That's some story, isn't it? But is any of it true? While not much could be found to prove the story, it does appear that the Tubbies existed. So too did a man named Joshua LaFleur. What could not be found was any mention, at least in any official documents, that LaFleur had died in battle. So, does this mean that the LaFleur County Bigfoot War took place only within the realm of folklore? Despite an undeniable roster of hoaxes that presumably comprise the majority of Bigfoot sightings, reports like this 1924 incident, which is a common story, on Mount St. Helens in Washington State boggle the mind. It was here that a group of prospectors claimed to have encountered a group of 7-foot-tall ape men, which nearly killed them all with boulders. Prospectors Frank Beck, Gabe Lefevre, John Peterson, Marion Smith, and Smith's son Roy recounted their potential Bigfoot encounter to the Oregonian. The men said they were about 8 miles from Spirit Lake when four of these, quote, gorilla men, unquote, attacked them. The bipedal creatures were covered with long black hair, and the men guessed they weighed around 300 pounds. Their ears are about 4 inches long and stick straight up, the men told the newspaper. They have four toes, which are short and stubby. Beck reportedly fired at the creatures with his rifle and managed to shoot one of them off of a cliff. Thinking themselves successful in driving the beasts away, the group calmly retired that night. Suddenly, their cabin began shaking on its foundation as the creatures slammed against the walls, with one tearing a hole in the roof. Many of the rocks fell through a hole in the roof, and two of the rocks struck Beck, one of them rendering him unconscious for nearly 2 hours, the article continued. The group escaped the cabin at the crack of dawn and decided not to alert a single soul. Nevertheless, somebody talked, and word of mouth prompted an investigation into the violent Bigfoot encounter. Despite the U.S. Forest Service launching an inquest that year, Rangers J.H. Huffman and William Welch found nothing to corroborate the story of these men. Not even the cliff where Beck had shot a creature yielded any evidence. In the end, the authorities deemed the incident a prank, despite finding 14-inch footprints nearby. The gorge where the Bigfoot encounter may or may not have taken place is now called Ape Canyon. In January of 2021, Pulitzer Prize-winning newspaper The Gazette chronicled a shocking daytime Bigfoot sighting that occurred in Summit County, Colorado, in the summer of 2019. It concerned a hiker who, taking a rest at about 11,000 feet near a log cabin in the Mayflower Gulch, when he spotted a large bipedal creature failing to scale a 20-foot wall covered in snow. The hiker and two others went to search the area for the beast when it suddenly disappeared. They failed to locate the creature itself, but found enormous hand and footprints in the snow. They photographed the evidence, and it was sent to investigator Scott Miles at the Bigfoot Field Research Organization, or BFRO, which deemed it authentic. If any of you ever watched the TV show Finding Bigfoot, the BFRO is that group. One of the founders of the BFRO and several of the members are the ones that are searching for Bigfoot in that program. And they go all over the United States. The BFRO deemed this a Class A sighting, as it occurred under the clear visibility of daytime and regarded a bipedal creature that left large prints behind. Perhaps most shocking is how many BFRO investigations result in Class A status, with one of the more recent Bigfoot sightings of that kind occurring in fall of 2020. Reported on March 11th of 2021, the BFRO detailed a case from Shawnee, Ohio, that occurred in September of 2020. It saw a woman and her husband hiking through Wayne National Forest when they heard wood knocking sounds. They heard this while hiking here before, but never thought much of it. That afternoon, however, around 5 p.m., they heard a howling, roaring sound which utterly terrified them. The couple immediately turned around and went home. Who wouldn't? They spent the night looking up animal noises from creatures native to Ohio, but found nothing even close to what they heard. Waving it off, the couple returned for another hike a few days later and saw a large, dark, furry, bipedal creature that rapidly bounded over a ridge and disappeared. The BFRO currently lists six other Class A Bigfoot sightings from 2021 alone. Bigfoot encounters happen all over the country, but a new report claims Washington State has seen the most. Maybe Bigfoot is a population of primates that has managed to elude modern man for centuries. Maybe these Bigfoot sightings are a series of misunderstandings and lies. There's no undeniable proof that the legendary ape man exists, and that no amount of skeptical debunking has disconfirmed that it doesn't. Absence of evidence, in other words, isn't evidence of absence. One of the more convincing and interesting, and I read that as entertaining, tales comes from a man who said Bigfoot was always hanging around his grandma's house and seemed to fixate on his mother because they had once locked eyes. His grandma had suffered a stroke, and that Bigfoot would always be tapping on their windows, ringing a bell outside, and generally aggravating them. Could this have been evidence of attempted socializing on Bigfoot's part? The whole story is a bit muddled, but at some point they say they went out in the field and shot the Bigfoot as a nuisance. They decided that they had killed or severely injured, they weren't sure which, a juvenile Bigfoot. And after that, they found one of their pigs with its head ripped off. Yeah, really? Before this time, the Bigfoot had never done anything violent. I think he was basically just getting on their nerves. He only got violent when they did. He wasn't bothering them, really. They were just scared of something they didn't understand. As the story went on, and this guy was very long-winded, as a lot of people who claim to have Bigfoot encounters seem to be, he told about a family friend who was at his grandma's house and went out to check on the noise. When he came back in the house, it was obvious something was wrong with him, but he wouldn't tell anyone anything about it. The man telling the story later asked him what he saw again, and he still wouldn't tell him. That man eventually ended up dying from COVID, but before he did, he wrote out a letter to the storyteller and told him what he had seen, and that was Bigfoot scavenging from the scrap pile behind the grandma's house, and that it smiled at him and said, "Hello." The man never went hunting again, and shortly after the Bigfoot sighting, he moved from the country to the city. It scared him flat out of the woods. It could be considered that a Bigfoot sighting would be a once-in-a-lifetime event, but a lot of storytellers have had more than one encounter. That would lead one to believe one of two things. Either these people are nutty as fruitcakes, or you only ever see Bigfoot if you believe in it. Much in the same way I believe that those who are strong adherents to a belief in UFOs will indeed see UFOs sometime in their life. Whether people who claim to have seen Bigfoot are nutty or not, it's still entertaining to think about it. It might even be fun to have a Bigfoot encounter. But then again, it might not. Well, that's it for this week's show. Hope you enjoyed a little bit of information about some Bigfoot stories. I found them interesting. I hope you did too. Listen, be careful. Have a great week. And we'll see you next time on Terry's Mysterious Moments.